Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. And on this episode, we are reviewing In the Heights. I would sing that, but I would offend too many people. Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, discussing movie manners, Indiana Jones, and our topic this week is unexpected TV cancellations. Let's get on with the show.
You wouldn't really offend anyone. You would just disappoint all of us.
That hurts. That really hurts. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today is my fellow host, Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
And John Davenport is still on sabbatical. And people asking why, I don't have time for that. So filling in his spot is premier artist. And also he was part of the WandaVision collection of our podcast earlier this year, Vinny Schwartz.
Hey, I just wandered in again.
Yeah, you get like no notice, by the way. So welcome aboard.
Yeah, just, you know, hanging out, waiting like a podcast goblin, just waiting for my chance to crawl out.
Shine.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, thankfully, you've actually seen both of these movies, so you'll be helpful with that.
It's all part of my plan.
It's a master plan. I know. Before we get into anything, I got to mention this because it was really cool, exciting news that I think it was June 3rd. So it was like last week. Did you guys know that McLovin turned 40?
I did. I saw that.
Yeah,
on Twitter. Apparently it was a dumb joke Seth Rogen made when he was like a teenager.
It's still funny though. We all wanted a McLovin driver's license for a long period of time.
I got one.
Do you really?
Well, does it work? I don't anymore, unfortunately. I think it got scrapped with my first ever car. But yeah, we got a copy of Superbad with a McLovin driver's license with it.
Did you like cut and paste your own picture on that and just walk around picking up babes?
No, but I did have it in my wallet for a bit, you know, because it was cool at the time. Show my friends like, look, I got the thing.
Show up at random movie premieres and be like, hey, Emma Stone.
Right. I worked at the movie theater and we had a giant poster behind the box office when this was like still super popular. And it was something about it, basically, like, because you had to show your ID for rated R movies. And so this was their funny way of using the pop culture reference of McLovin while also...
From Superbad, by the way. In case you didn't know.
Yeah.
Somebody's in there going, what the... Who is McLovin? It's Superbad. It's a movie.
While also, you know, tying it back to, you have to show your ID if you are 16 years old.
That means he's been able to buy beer for a long time.
Mm-hmm. He's an old man now.
19 years. That's sad. Also, just so you know, we are giving away Indiana Jones combo sets later in this very podcast, so stay tuned for that. We're just giving them away. Giving them away. And it happens to be the same week that Indiana Jones 5 began filming. Now, longtime listeners know Indiana Jones is my favorite movie hero. Even I will admit, I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm worried about basically every bone.
His hip breaking?
Yeah, all 206 bones in that body. But I got to say, they showed a picture of him online. You can find it. It's on our Facebook page and our Twitter, too, at Buy Popcorn. A lot of people are giving him grief, you know, because he's almost 80 years old and everything. But how many people can still fit in their clothes? And he looks like he still fits. Like, it doesn't look like they just had to let out the shirt and the pants and the jacket. You know, he's not rolling with the boulder anymore. I mean, he's still in decent, solid shape.
Now, the question is he still going to be using the whip?
Or is it a cane?
Or is it be like an automated whip? Oh, hold on. How do you work this thing?
It's an electric whip. Oh, that's not nice. I think his stuntman will. Yes, his stuntman will.
He's too old to be whipping that around. It just ain't going to work. Just like the saddest part, too, is he's never been able to run. So it's not like much is changing there for him.
I mean, I can't run, so I'm not going to make fun of him for that.
Sure, but we can do that. We're able to do that.
Well, I'm excited. I just thought it's a great cast. Mads Mikkelsen's going to be in it. Phoebe Waller-Bridge is in it. I mean, it's got a great cast. Mm-hmm. He still looks like Indiana Jones. He looks like Crystal Skull Indy. I mean, he doesn't look much older than that, so... As long as they stay away from the CGI monkeys, there's a shot. This could be okay.
So does this mean we're not getting Shia LaBeouf back?
Oh, no, he's not. No. I don't even know if Hollywood will take him back at this point. Like, nope. I hope they recast it, too. I hope they didn't just say, well, Mutt's away on a trip.
They just have some random guy come in and be like, yeah, this is Indy's kid. And like, we're just not going to dress that he looks different.
I hope that he looks like a replica of Shia, but clearly isn't Shia. So he has like the same dark hair with a little bit of flow to it. And oh, he's got now the beard and mustache and everything. Like, I want him to look like Shia, but I want there to be something noticeable, like his eye is missing or something. And we're like, that's not Shia.
Listen, just go look up in those like weird listed ads in Hollywood. And I'm sure you can find a Shia LaBeouf impersonator. And then he can come in and do like a couple lines and then disappear for the rest of the movie.
Well, if he's a real Shia impersonator, he'll do a couple lines. All right. What I hope they do is they just go big and bold, and the Phoebe Waller-Bridge is actually playing Mutt Lange, and they don't explain it at all. They start calling her Mutt Lange, and nobody explains why is it a woman? Why is it not shy? What is going on? I don't want them to say anything. Just act like, no, I was always a girl. And the first that you didn't see that? Weird.
Yeah.
Nobody's on board with this. Okay.
I'm getting into trans territory here.
No.
I'm trying to picture it. That'd be like, it'd be so odd at first, but I think if you just literally didn't address it the entire time.
Exactly.
I think by the middle of the movie, you're like, yeah, okay, this works.
Yeah, no, and no, man, and I'm not talking, I mean, it's Pride Month. I respect that. LGBTQ, I have no problem with that. I'm saying they just replace the guy from the first movie with a woman from the second movie and don't tell anyone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just totally recast the character with a woman. And basically, everyone in the audience knows that's how bad Shia screwed up. That's it.
Oh, poor Shia. I don't know if he's going to have a career anymore.
He'll come back.
Apparently, it's possible.
Let's talk about everything that happened in movie and TV over the past week that really caught our eye. Not a lot. It's actually a very slow entertainment news time. It usually is this time of year. Usually it's just the big releases, and that's all anybody talks about. There's 160 articles about what Vin Diesel wore in the upcoming Fast 9. So here's what did catch your eye. The independent flick Code 8 with Robbie and Stephen Amell is getting a sequel, as is Cruella with Emma Stone and director Craig Gillespie. Both attached. Hacks is getting season 2 on HBO Max. Shadow and Bone has been renewed on Netflix for season 2, while Jupiter's Woo! Legacy was canceled on Netflix. So,
Oh well.
That's fine.
Rob Zombie somehow got another budget, and he's rebooting The Munsters with a feature-length film, no doubt to cast his wife in one of the lead roles. And Hannibal's Brian Fuller is remaking Stephen King's Christine for Blumhouse and Sony Pictures. There's really, like I said, not a lot shaken up, but there's a couple of cool things in there. Anything catch your eye, either one of you?
Off the bat, Rob Zombie doing The Munsters, like...
Why?
Yeah. I mean, I actually enjoy some of the movies that he does.
Do you?
But, yeah. No, I do. I really do. No. Okay. House of a Thousand Corpses.
Great, yeah.
I actually enjoyed his take of Halloween. It's fun.
Oh, no. Mm-mm. No, that's wrong.
This is where you're wrong, and you have to exit the podcast. Thank you for coming. Have a nice day.
I mean, you don't have to exit.
What did you give that Harry Potter movie again?
Fantastic Beasts. Yeah. We're not talking about this.
No, okay? We're going to talk about that every time. yeah, but his take on a, I would say, pretty family-friendly IP is going to be interesting, to say the least.
As long as he doesn't cast his wife.
Oh, he's going to.
Yeah,
and she's going to take her shirt off.
In The Munsters? I don't think so.
Yep.
I don't think so. But she'll definitely be in it because apparently she was a Sherry Moon Zombie. Was that her name now? Sherry Moon Zombie?
Yeah. Sherry Moon Zombie. She's in literally everything he's ever done.
Yeah. And her career outside of that is... Okay. Well, I will say The Devil's Rejects, I think that's a great movie. I love that movie. Isn't that anything else that I've liked? So House of the Thousand Corpses was okay. But everything else has just been like a de-escalating in terms of quality since then. So I'm just, that whole thing terrifies me. But hey, do a family-friendly property. Do it R-rated. Let's go nuts. Let's make this the real Monsters. How people would be terrified by this.
Like, it's the Universal Monsters, but as a family, and they just terrorize a small town.
That does actually sound really fun.
Yeah, that would be cool. Especially, that would be fun. I would watch that, actually.
Yeah, can we make sure this happens? I don't care who does it. Aaron, are you busy?
Breathe. I do care who does it. I always care who does it. Christine is one I don't need a remake for. I think the original really stands on its own. And I mean, there's so many other Stephen King short stories and stuff that they can work with instead.
I was going to ask you if you felt like there was something out of Stephen King's vast collection that you feel is missing. Like, because they go back to remaking properties so much for Stephen King, but I don't hear as much about starting a new property. And there's no way we're exhausted through all of Stephen King's collection. I don't know everything he's done. Unfortunately, I'm just not that person. So I kind of turn to you and people like Troy Heinrichs, I think, is a big
huge
fan.
Stephen King fan, yeah.
Yep. One of the fill-in hosts that we have, Troy. So
yeah, he was on last week. I would add this and say that Desperation is my favorite Stephen King book. It was a TV movie, but it wasn't a good one. So I don't even know if you call it a remake. If it's a TV movie, I mean, back when they were TV movies, they weren't, you know, TV series events or whatever. It was a TV movie budget. So I don't think it's ever been made for the right scope, and it could be a great film. So I would watch that. But he's got some. I mean, the guy doesn't stop writing. You know, he got hit by a freaking van, and he's still, like, writing with one finger. I mean, he's amazing when it comes to writing. Hmm. The Long Walk is a good one. That's a good one. Look that up. So there you go.
Is that one a short story? Or is that one?
I think it's a novella.
Okay.
I could be wrong. That could be an actual book. I can't keep them straight anymore. What about you, Amanda? Anything out of here?
I'm really excited about Shadow and Bone getting a second season. There's not much to add to it. I really enjoyed the first one. I've been enjoying reading the book because I actually got the book collection. And I feel like there's a lot that could be done with this universe because, from my understanding, it's not just these three books, but there's actually kind of like an expansion of her universe. So I'm curious how far Netflix will be willing to take it. And if we don't get the third one, which is the final part of this Shadow and Bone series, if you will, then I'm going to be really pissed. But I have faith that we'll get the third one.
And I love that show purely from like a visual standpoint and lore. Those two things were great for me. And it's great to show how to use your budget, like on Shadow and Bone, and how to not use your budget, like on Jupiter's Legacy.
Because they couldn't afford a real wig?
Man, they could, like, where? Where did the money go? I saw that show apparently cost hundreds of millions.
200 million. And they're just, 200 million.
That's insane to me, because it does not look like it.
Mm-mm. I agree. And Shadow and Bone, I think I've watched two episodes of it. And it feels very much like it's got a Game of Thrones level of world building.
Mm-hmm. The world building's great.
But I've only gotten two episodes in, and I've had to basically rewatch those two with the subtitles on to understand what the hell was going on. So I want to like it more than I currently do, but I also don't dislike anything about it, if that makes sense.
It does. Yeah. I mean, it just sounds like you're struggling to get over something that
I gotta read
bothers you, but isn't really something that, like, it's not a hit against the show. Game of Thrones had the same thing, too, in many parts where, at least for me, I had to turn on subtitles because I'm like, I can't understand what you guys are talking about. And it's especially hard when you're watching or even reading a story that is building its own world and has new places and different names and everything is very unique. And you're like, what the heck is that? Like, just say it's a cup, but instead they've created a new word for cup. And you're like, okay, well, now I have to have the subtitles to understand what you actually said.
Pass me the hold of Pelopolites. What?
Yeah, right?
What is that? That's not a word. That's a bunch of letters you just threw together. Yeah, but it's my letters thrown together.
Yeah, basically. And they do, I haven't read the Game of Thrones books, but...
Oh, man. You are missing out.
Well, those are dense. Those are heavy. I've tried. I'm not... It's not worth it to me. I'll watch the show. But there's a lot of that I can see where there's connection and where people can see... There's almost like an overlay. There's a lot of things that relate to each other. It's a completely different story, but there's so many things that I can see, okay, Game of Thrones was really talented with their visual, and Shadow of Bone is really talented with their visual, and they have such an exploring world. Like, there's so many things that I don't know and I want to know. And there's so many places it could go.
Mm.
And I like that.
I'll get back into it. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group. It's The Hollywood Outsider. It's a closed group, so you got to look for it. Or we're on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. You can also email us if you choose to at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. It's feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. If you have any thoughts or you just want to send John a note telling him you miss him because he won't read his own email. All right. Patreon supporters. Our show is independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses are from our own pockets. Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. Once you sign up, you get immediate access to all the content in your respective tier. We have exclusive podcasts on Patreon directly for Patreon supporters. It never comes on the regular feed. Now you understand that. If you want to support the show, it's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. And any patrons that enter our contest get an extra entry for every dollar they contribute. And we've got a contest coming up. Hang tight. Now we've got two spoiler-free reviews. The first one is In the Heights, which comes out June 11th in theaters and HBO Max. And before we even get to the review, I just want to tell you, see it in theaters with your friends. Okay, Amanda, take it away.
I couldn't agree more. In Washington Heights, New York, the scent of warm coffee hangs in the air just outside of 181st Street. Subway stop where a kaleidoscope of dreams rallies a vibrant and tight-knit community. At the intersection of it all is a likable and magnetic bodega owner who hopes, imagines, and sings about a better life. I did not write this. This was far too creative to just say there's a guy who wants to pursue his dreams. There's a bunch of people who are trying to live their life in a very fun and magnetic and, I don't know, engaging way.
And it's really focused on the four primary characters, Vanessa, Usnavi, Nina, and Benny. Those are really the primary characters of the movie.
Yeah. And they're all amazing. They're all characters that I cared about and that I wanted to know more from. So my first question, I have one for each of you individually, and then I have some for both of you to address.
So when you ask him his question, do I have to completely ignore it? Like, I just leave?
I mean, I guess you could, but you're also not Hispanic. So I don't know if that would be...
I am married to a Hispanic person, so I'm Hispanic by proxy.
I don't think that's how it works.
She doesn't either.
So, Vinny, given your experience and heritage, do you feel that Hispanic culture is authentically portrayed in In the Heights?
So a lot of the culture isn't exactly my experience. It's not one-to-one because it focuses a lot on more of the, like, Cuban and, you know, the outlying, like, islands of that culture. But they do have a lot of overlap. So even though there are differences, there's so many similarities that really drew me in, and I enjoyed the entire movie all the way through. It was one of those things where I came in thinking, like, yeah, it'll be fun, it'll be a decent movie, but the entire time it just feels like warm. I know it's probably cheesy to say, but man, especially the matriarch of the entire thing, like Abuela Claudia, just kind of takes care of everyone in the neighborhood. You know, she's kind of like everyone's grandma. She cooks and does like sweet little gestures for everyone. Just really reminds me of my own grandmother. So a lot of the other things, like, of course, the food, the little like parties and stuff like that. It's a lot of things that remind me of that side of my family.
And it made you hungry, didn't
it? Because oh, it made God. Me hungry. There's a scene where they have a nice big dinner for one of the characters that comes back, and everything about that entire dinner, I'm like, man, we just like smashed an entire bucket of popcorn, but I could eat a plate of all that.
And that's where I can bring him by proxy, because by being married to someone who's Hispanic, every time I go to a gathering on that side of the family, there's so much food. There's so much, and it all smells delicious. Half of it would kill me because I'm far too fair for that kind of level of spice. But it's an amazing collection. They love food. They love family. They love friends. They just love life. And it's a really cool world to be part of, because us white people, you know, we have family gatherings, but it's all like flipping burgers and usually drinking, and that's about it. And that's just not what I've experienced on the other side, on my wife's side.
Yeah. So, Aaron, a specific question for you, as someone who is more hesitant to check out musicals, did In the Heights inspire you to do a little dance in your seat?
I think I danced in my seat, but it could have just been, I don't know, too much popcorn, you know, or too many chicken tenders. I don't know. But I had an epiphany while watching this, because I don't like musicals typically. I mean, there's a couple that I, you know, Greatest Showman, stuff like that. Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, but typically not a fan, not a fan. The way that the movie presents itself, it doesn't feel so much as it's a random song for no reason. It's just there because it's a, you know, clever hook or whatever. To me, every time a song popped up, it felt like a very natural, as ridiculous as it sounds, because who would start singing in the streets? It felt like a natural implementation of the dialogue. It felt like a natural progression for the script. It felt like this is the next logical step for what these characters are doing and how to present this to the audience and to examine their life and to examine their relationships and how to examine their dreams and what they want to accomplish, especially what Usnavi wants to accomplish. And all of that really made the musical part of it better, because I would honestly say, like, I don't think too many of the songs I would be cranking on the radio myself personally. I think it's a great soundtrack. I'm not saying anything negative about it. I just feel like the songs felt like part of the movie, part of the experience, and they go together. To me, there's 96,000 and In the Heights. Those are two songs where I enjoy them on their own, but I really felt like the rest of it really was part of the fabric of the movie, and the experience was to watch the movie while listening to the soundtrack, or watch the play while listening to the music. I feel like they go hand in hand.
Vinny, how about you? How did you feel about the music?
Well, like Aaron said, I'm not normally, I won't go out and be like, you know what? I'm in the mood to watch like five musicals in a row or go to a live show. Like, that's not my thing. Not to say like, oh, I'm too manly for that, but it's just not normally my thing. But after watching Hamilton this past year and then watching this, it's pretty safe to say pretty much anything Lin-Manuel Miranda writes, I'm probably going to go watch it. Everything he does is just so musical and magical, and it just draws you in. It's so good. Like, I'll find myself randomly just singing songs from Hamilton and now this movie. So even if musicals aren't your thing, just go watch it. It's such a joy to watch.
Isn't it amazing how he has created his own complete and utter style
for, oh, totally,
a musical? Yeah. I mean, you can tell, you know, as soon as the first song comes out, I'm like, oh, that's kind of like a Hamilton song. I mean, it's just, he incorporates everybody's mood and being and the story he's telling with the music. So that's what I mean when I said earlier, like, it all flows together. I have a really hard time separating from the one from the other in that respect.
I feel like he's truly one of the most talented artists of our generation and living artists, because not only is he a good actor, I don't think he's anything that stands out or is remarkable in terms of acting, no offense, but I think he's talented in that way, but mostly it's his ability to write a story in such a, I mean, just the musical element that he adds to it. And he is creating these really great beats, and everything just comes alive. There's a spark to it, which kind of goes back to what Vinny was talking about. But I just haven't seen music written in such a way that you feel like you're experiencing a dialogue through a mm-hmm. song. And yet these characters, I think to Aaron's point earlier, where you were talking about how it's so ingrained in the film and it doesn't feel like they're just doing a random musical number. It truly feels like instead of having a conversation, they're just singing it. And it doesn't feel weird or obscure. And it's because of the way that he handles the storytelling in the song. And it's so creative and it's so unique to mix that hip hop with a musical. I don't know. It's just something that I would not have thought about myself or have thought that I would enjoy. But it is remarkable to me just how witty and punny and everything he is when he is writing out these numbers.
He has the natural evolution of the musical right in his pocket. Like he is the future of the musical currently. You know, I'm sure it'll go through more changes, but man, the musical has kind of been the same kind of thing for so many years, which is probably why it just never stood out for me. I never really got into them. But this is like appealing to a younger generation. It's new. It's fresh. It feels different. It doesn't feel like West Side Story told once more over again. You know, it's different. It's unique. Right.
Well, because I think a lot of other musicals are just like, here's a story. And for a lot of the key points, the characters are going to be singing about what they're doing.
Yeah.
Whereas his musicals are, here's a story. Now let's have these characters draw you in and make you part of it in like a really engaging way. Like the songs are their own stories in and of themselves. And I think that's really what sets it apart from most other musicals.
And it's got a great message. I mean, Hamilton was really a history lesson. More people learned about history from that frickin' musical than they did from going to school, I swear. Because I've talked to people. Yeah. I talked to people that I've known for years that didn't know anything about it before. They're like, well, I didn't know, you know, that's how that worked. I'm like, what? Yeah. What?
I feel personally attacked right now, Aaron. Yeah, you should. Don't talk about our conversations on this podcast.
And this one, in the same kind of way, feels like a Hispanic culture lesson.
It is a culture lesson. Yeah, it's
really like, hey, you know, there's not one, hey, essay, there's no stereotypes in this movie. It's very much, this is a Hispanic culture lesson. So, you know, like, this is really what Hispanic culture is like for the most part. Like, this is the majority of it. It's not, you know, gang members and all the crap, you know, people hop on the border and everything else that you see on TV all the time, all the negative stereotypes.
A sepia filter over the entire movie.
Yeah. Everything's yellow for no reason whatsoever.
Anywhere that's not America or Europe, sepia filter.
And I think that's what I love most about. I mean, honestly, what I love most is my wife had a wonderful time, and she does not like musicals, but it felt like, you know, her whole world was there. And she was just so happy to see things that she got, and I had no idea what was going on. She's like, you're my world now. You know, stuff like that. it was cool to experience that through her eyes.
And all the characters felt like, even the side characters that really just get a couple of appearances, they felt like they had such a magnetic presence themselves and were such a unique characters that, I don't know, I guess I don't feel like too many movies put that much emphasis on characters that you're only going to see a glimpse of. If they're in a nail salon or a hair salon, for example, you're not going to give them a whole lot of creativity. You're not going to make them impressionable in any way. And yet here we are with each character having its own presence and having its own, you know, remarkable moment in some way, even if it's very, very brief. And I also feel like this is just, there's a part of it that's a cultural lesson. That's a culture lesson. But then there's the other side of it where it's a cultural celebration for people who don't need a lesson. I think to your point, Aaron, your wife was experiencing it as a celebration. But it put this culture in such a beautiful light, because so often, to your point, we see it in the negative, stereotypical way, whereas here, everyone has something to celebrate about themselves, about somebody else. It was so fun and vivacious. And this is how people who are ingrained in this culture and ingrained in these communities see each other and see their world versus the way white people typically, especially in Hollywood, typically look at Hispanic culture, and they put it in that negative light. Here, you have it through the lens of someone who gets it and is like, that's not what this is always about, man. Like, there is so much beautiful and positive messaging and moments and so much, I don't know, just the connection of family and friends is deeper in Hispanic cultures than in any culture that I've seen. And that's really what you're getting here, is you're getting so much love and positivity and support, and it's beautiful to watch.
And it's directed by John M. Chu, who did Crazy Rich Asians, so you've got a very nice, beautifully shot film as well, too. The dance set pieces were just fantastic.
So that's what I was going to ask you about, because he's had some hit or misses in the past, but then Crazy Rich Asians was beautiful. Mm-hmm. I loved it. So what did you guys think of John Chu as director, and which actor stood out most to you as our wrap-up questions?
I thought the use of colors and set design were just so well done and just beautiful. Like the entire time, like I said, the movie just draws you in, and every little detail that they put in is just great. Like I don't know how to describe it besides just perfect.
Well, there's a cool bridge too, like where there's a narration kind of going throughout the film, and then how that narration kind of connects at the very end, and there's a transition scene there. I don't want to say anything more about that, but you'll know it when you see it. I thought that was handled really masterfully. Like it really just was beautifully shot. It kind of catches you off guard a little bit, like, oh, and the whole movie comes together at the end. But a lot of that's done visually as opposed to through story.
And which character was the most, was the biggest standout for you?
Anthony Ramos, hands down. A guy is a leading man just waiting. I remember seeing him in Hamilton and, you know, Diggs is good. Don't get me wrong. But every time this kid came on stage, I'm like, he's really got something. You know, that's something where you just can't stop watching him. And this whole movie, it's his movie. I mean, yes, Melissa Barrera is very good. The rest of the cast is very good. I like seeing Corey Hawkins do something different because at 24.
Everyone from
did.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine too.
Yeah.
Don't forget about them.
Yeah, of course. We all the Brooklyn Nine-Nine connections that only Amanda sees.
There's like two or three.
Just ridiculous. But anyway, Anthony Ramos, fantastic. Absolutely loved everything he did. When he dances, he is so fluid. He is so he just rolls into it. I mean, the guy is just super talented. And every time he's telling a story, I'm captivated by it. Every time he's feeling something, I feel it. I mean, it's just, he's that kind of rare talent. You don't see that. To me, like, that's how much I love the guy. I thought he was fantastic. I was just, after I walked out of the movie, I'm like, whatever he does, I'm watching it. Whatever he does.
That's exactly how I felt after seeing him in Hamilton. I feel like he is the live on-screen persona equivalent of Lin-Manuel Miranda. Like, we have Lin-Manuel Miranda, who does all of this kind of behind the scenes work that is just absolutely stunning in every way and so creative and so enchanting. And then we have Anthony Ramos, who's giving us that visual perspective of, like, I can't take my eyes off of him and everything that he's doing. He's so talented, and it's hard to, I feel like I don't have as many comparisons of any actor that has really stood out to me like he has.
Go listen to In the Heights, the Broadway musical song, the original song, and then listen to, because Lin-Manuel Miranda sings that one, then listen to this one, the soundtrack song. He sings Lin-Manuel Miranda's music better than Miranda does.
He totally does.
I mean, Miranda's a better writer, I don't know how good Ramos is a writer, but I'm just saying, like, Miranda is obviously fantastic writer and, like I said, revolutionary in terms of the musical. But Ramos makes his work better.
Yes, they are the perfect connection. I would watch, I mean, they could be walking down the street and I'd be like, okay, get my popcorn. I'm going to watch them walking. That sounds creepy.
And then they'd be like, who's this white girl and why she's following us?
Well, I want him to do a Hamilton movie, like a real movie, not like, you know, like In the Heights versus the stage musical that the Hamilton was. And I want Ramos in the Hamilton role. I want to see that because now I just feel like he'd do it better. Yeah I said it, Miranda. I'm sorry.
Well, since he was chosen, I'm going to go with Ogle Merides, who played Abuela Claudia again. Because again, I just, everything she did just exuded warmth. And like, I fully expect her in real life. I don't know if she is or not, but the way that she acts is so convincing that I'm sure she would act like that to anyone off the street, just walking around, you know, handing out treats. And and her singing was fantastic as well. Because I guess she plays the same role in the stage version.
She does, yep.
So, fantastic choice again.
Yeah, I loved her. I think warmth is the best word to describe her. Because anytime there was a moment with her, I was just like, it feels like you're getting a big hug. Or like you have a warm blanket covering you or something. Like, she just seems like, I want to go, you know, get her groceries or come over for dinner and make her dinner or something. Like, she feels like what we all think of our own grandmas or abuelas as, you know, she is the epitome of that. So if the full price of admission for In the Heights were $10, what would you give it, Vinny?
Man, I should have looked up the pesos conversion, but I'd give it an 850.
Okay. Aaron, what would you give it?
Exact same score.
Me too. Or me three, technically.
Oh, look at that.
Yay.
It doesn't compare to Fantastic Beasts, though.
Oh, my God. Get out of here.
Vinny, nobody remembers that review, including Amanda, because she doesn't remember how high
I try to not remember it, and yet it always gets brought up. It is the bane of my existence, and if I could erase it from my film critic history, I would, and I've tried.
It's going on your tombstone.
Right,
please don't.
All right, the next movie, Conjuring. Conjuring 3, Conjuring the Devil Made Me Do It, whatever you want to say, but it's in theaters and HBO Max as well. Apparently that's their thing this summer. And it brings back real-life paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren in one of the most sensational cases from their files. And if you look it up, it kind of does not go anywhere close to what the movie does. But hey, we'll let that go. It starts with a fight for the soul of a young boy as Arnie Johnson murders his landlord. And that marks the first time in U.S. history that a murder suspect would claim demonic possession as a defense. The Warrens immediately believe Arnie, and they're on the case to prove that demonic possession is actually the reason for the murder. He didn't mean to do it. And unlike previous films, this one actually has a foe of sorts for the Warrens, but I don't want to say anything more on that. So without spoiling, and I mean like a physical foe, without spoiling, what did you think of this latest tale of the Warrens from a story perspective, Amanda?
Meh.
Okay. What was meh about it? Let's elaborate.
Super meh. Most of it. When we're talking about from a story perspective, most of it, especially if you're comparing it to the first two, it, unlike a remake, this is a good time when you can make comparisons to others in a franchise. I'm not always a big, you know, fan of making those comparisons, but I feel like this, there's some justice to it. And so here we have a very different take, and while I appreciate the valiant efforts, it did fall extremely short from the prior two films. Now, if this were a standalone film, it would probably get more than just meh. Probably get like, oh, it was all right. But here, especially upon reflecting on it and thinking about it beyond sitting in that experience in the theater, which always heightens my experience in general, but it was rather forgetful, and it also just, it took away some of the power of the franchise, of the series, the trilogy, whatever it is. So that's kind of how I felt about it. Now, our two main, Ed and Lorraine, those two are still amazing.
Hang on. We're not talking about cast. We're still talking about story.
Okay, sorry.
I know you want to like do the whole thing right now, but hang on.
I know. In one swift breath is how I do it, right?
Yeah. Vinny, what about you? Story-wise?
I mean, meh has already been said. How many other ways can you say meh? So again, a big ol' whopping meh. Because it doesn't do anything new. It doesn't do anything interesting.
Well, I wouldn't say it doesn't do anything new. It does something new. In terms of the story, it takes a different approach.
It takes a bad approach.
But yeah, anyways. But that's still different.
Sure.
Okay, nothing new. And or interesting. How's that?
Yes. Sure. We'll go with that. But it wasn't awful. So I can't poo-poo all over it. It was just a big old meh. So for those of you with HBO Max, I'd recommend to watch at home.
Yeah. Go to town. The Devil Meh Me Do It. I don't know why I even tried that. That was pathetic.
You've done that before. It's okay.
I concur it. With this.
That was about the same amount of effort they put into making the movie. So I think it's good.
Yeah, man. I really think it comes down to the production, but I'll come back to that. Lorraine Warren was played by Vera Farmiga in the Conjuring movies, and she died a natural death aged 92 on April 18th, 2019. And she'd been a head consultant on all the Conjuring projects, an avid follower of the series. There's also a lot of concern about the validity to a lot of their cases. Does that affect you when you're watching these movies? Like how real or not real those cases are? Does that matter to you, or you really don't care?
I try to buy into them if it certainly can enhance my viewing experience. Like, oh my God, this really happened. But I'm also not naive. So I know that regardless when they say based on true events, there's going to be some
creative liberty
taken, right? And here is no exception. However, once I processed how much of it was potentially not true, I didn't care because I still felt like, you know, when I'm watching a movie, I still want to be entertained. That's the bottom line. And they're not telling me that this is a documentary, which would make it a very different feeling. It is still just a fictional film. And so I'm fine with them taking those liberties and making it more interesting because I do think they did that. I do think they made it more interesting. It just still fell short of the other films because of that different direction. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of how I feel about it. What about you, Vinny?
I actually didn't know how much... Well, let me preface this by saying, let's just assume that the whole supernatural aspect is totally 100% true and provable. Moving on. After doing a little bit of research into which parts were real and which parts weren't, come to find out that actually the most interesting part of the movie was in fact fabricated for mm-hmm. the movie. So that was an interesting bit of information to come across. And the way they portray certain events towards the end, it really makes you... Really makes you be like, oh, well, I guess that's the direction they took, and they really tried to skew it a certain way, trying to be as vague as possible. But, yeah, I think they could have had some better direction would have helped the movie out a bit.
Yeah, when it comes to the real-life people, the Warrens, I'm fascinated by them, and I actually really, really, really would like to see the flip side, the inverse of these movies, where you actually see people that don't believe them completely. Like, because in all these movies, everybody takes them completely seriously. Like, they're barely skeptics, if they're skeptics at all. I want to see the flip side. I want to see the ones where nobody believes them and they think they're insane. And they just show up. I want to see those movies because I think those could be hilarious. But that's not what we get. So it doesn't bother me because I don't care how true something is. Usually when I'm watching a movie, unless they're trying to be very heavy topic or something, a very serious topic, I don't believe in ghosts. Sorry, people. So this doesn't really do anything to ruin my day. Were they hoodwinking people? I don't know. And I don't care because the movies are entertaining. Well, most of them are. So this was a little different. So were you scared? That's the bottom line. Were either of you scared at any point in this movie, in The Conjuring 3?
No, it's not. They had one cheap jump scare. And other than that, nothing else was really all that scary. I mean, even the nun was scarier. I'm sorry, not the nun, the movie, but the nun from The Conjuring 2.
Okay.
It's a really good visual.
I didn't want to be really harsh to you. I'm like, God, really?
No. I realized you should have clarified afterwards. The creature of the nun from The Conjuring 2 is probably one of my more favorite recent, like, scary movie monsters, because it's a really good visual. It takes that already kind of scary image of a nun, for those of you who went to Catholic school, and twists it even further, and it's just really striking. And it's got those moments where, paired with the music that they made for that movie, works really well. It's really unsettling. And you just feel like uneasy sitting there in your chair, like, oh, she's looking into my soul. But this movie, not so much.
I'd concur about the jump scare, although it did get me. But I don't know. This is where it becomes a little unfortunate because I used to not even get the antsy anticipation, tension building feeling in my body. But I guess as I've gotten older, I've gotten softer or something. So I could feel I could feel where the tension was building. And the sad part is I knew when it was coming because I've seen so many scary movies that there was nothing unique about it. I was like, oh, just wait a few seconds and then this is going to happen. And it happened. And so while there was effective tension building in some of the scenes, it was so predictable that it wasn't anything that scared me. So I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's kind of unfortunate because I was really hoping to have it scare me a bit because the first one and the second one did that for me in some way. And here there was just a little bit of a letdown. And I was, I don't know, I don't feel like it, maybe my memory is just the same as a goldfish. I don't remember them doing cheap jump scares. So is that just because of this new director or what? Or
yes.
Do I literally just have the memory of a goldfish?
Nope. Michael Chavez, he directed this one, and you can tell he is not the same kind of director as James Wan. And that's the thing that I felt throughout this movie completely. I'm like, I can tell all the time James Wan didn't direct it. That's not really necessarily a dig on Michael Chavez. It's just saying his approach to scaring is different than Juan. Juan really goes for tingling up your spine, for making you feel unnerved, for building the atmosphere, the tension, the suspense, and making you just terrified of what could happen. It's more about anticipating what could happen than it is reacting to what does happen. Where Chavez really reacts to things. Like he wants you to just jump in your seat. And those scares just annoy me. They're not really scary to me.
Right.
But you start ramping it up and you have a very terrified basement and she's going down and the match keeps going out, you know, in the first Conjuring or something along those lines. Like that's a really horrifying visual that plays because he keeps doing it and keeps playing with the audience. Where Chavez is just, it's more jump scares or like just coming at you like a freight train as opposed to building those moments. And that's really where I felt the biggest difference from the films, not really the story. It's really how the movie was put together, the production. Because Patrick Wilson is still great as Ed Warren. Vera Farmiga is fantastic as Lorraine Warren.
God bless.
So it has nothing to do with acting. It's all 100% production.
But to put it in perspective, he also directed La Llorona, so I think this is a step up for him.
Possibly. Yeah, possibly. And I don't think Juan is infallible because I don't necessarily love all of his franchises, you know, but for whatever reason, those Conjuring movies he nailed. And I don't really like any of the spinoffs, but he didn't direct those. So,
right.
So do you want more from the Warrens or do you guys feel like this is it?
If they're like this, nah, I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think if Juan decided to come back or he did, you know, maybe one last one with Farmiga and Wilson, then I would totally watch it. The two of them, aside from Juan and his directing style, are really what sold me on this franchise because I just buy into their characters. Now, I definitely know about the I don't know, potential hoodwinking of the real Warrens. And despite that and the fact that there's always, you know, there's an allegation or potential that they were just scamming and profiting off of this, I still don't hate the film characters because Farmiga and Wilson just made them their own thing. They made them so enjoyable and likable and lovable, and you just wanted to root for them. You wanted for them to save the world and, you know, protect us all from evil, and that's what they were there for. And I watched an interview with Farmiga recently, and I guess I just didn't fully understand how much of that character she really created separate from herself. A lot of times I see actors or actresses on screen and I'm like, oh, you know, that's super cute and lovable. And then I'll see an interview and I'm like, oh, that's just them. So they didn't really have to do much to change to be this way. However, she is just it's not anything bad against her. She's just a different type of personality. And she's completely created like her own world of who Lorraine Warren is in her mind. And it comes through in her presence on the screen. So I love her.
If $10 full price permission, what do you give Conjuring 3, Vinny?
$4.
All right. Amanda?
$5.
Yeah, I had it at $5. I'm $4.50. I'm going to split it.
You dropped it down.
Yeah, because it's so forgettable. It really is just so forgettable. And the ending.
The direction kind of made me irritated, too.
Yeah, I get that.
The more I reflect on it.
But you know what doesn't make me irritated? Indiana Jones, the greatest cinema hero of all time. I just want to make sure everyone is aware of that. From legendary filmmaker Steven Spielberg and George Lucas comes one of the greatest and my personal favorite movie franchises of all time in 4K Ultra HD. I've been waiting for this for a while. Collected together, all four original Indiana Jones movies have been visually remastered with HDR 10 and Dolby Vision and state-of-the-art Dolby Atmos for optimum picture and sound quality, just in time to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the adventure that started it all, Raiders of the Lost Ark. 40 years he has been the greatest hero in cinema. Dive into the spectacular stunts, the groundbreaking effects with 7 hours of special features on one disc. Spanning the globe on death-defying archaeological endeavors, if adventure has a name, it must be Indiana Jones. Own it now on 4K Ultra HD and Blu-ray from Paramount Pictures. It's rated PG and PG-13. In fact, little fun fact, Temple of Doom is one of the movies that helped invent the PG-13 rating. And if you love Indy as much as I do, and you want to bring cinema's greatest hero home for good, I'm not going to stop saying it. I'm going to make sure you understand he's cinema's greatest hero. We have 5 Blu-ray combo packs from Paramount Pictures to give away to 5 lucky listeners. That means all 4 movies. All 4 movies. I don't want to hear what you have to say about them. All 4 movies. They're all delightful. To enter, for your chance to win, just send an email to contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Give us your name and use the subject line, "Why did it have to be snakes?" Get it? Why did it have to be snakes? Now you send that to us and we will get back to you if you win. Remember, it's a Blu-ray combo pack, so you must live in the U.S. because we have to mail it to you. Isn't that exciting? That's 4 movies. We're giving away 20 movies, basically.
Such a beautiful pack. It belongs in a museum.
Oh, well played. All right, our From the Outside In topic this week is heartbreaking TV cancellations. Unexpected TV cancellation, however you want to word it. The TV cancellations that took you off guard and make you go, what? Firefly. That's really all I'm going to explain.
We're talking about Firefly in this episode.
Everyone's list. Firefly.
So why do cancellations of our favorite TV shows still bother us? I mean, when there's so much content out there, Amanda, because Jupiter's Legacy was announced. I didn't know anybody even watched the damn thing, but people were freaking out about it. Why does that still bother us when a show has been out for one season and gets canceled or gets yanked and we've got so much other stuff to watch?
Okay, so I can't defend whoever is upset about Jupiter's Legacy. That is on them. But in terms of the good shows that we get connected to, it's because of the story or the characters or, you know, especially if they end the season with somewhat of a cliffhanger, which a lot of networks and streaming services have moved away from, thankfully. But there are still some out there who don't wrap it up because they have hopes that it'll get renewed. Or they don't know that it's going to get canceled. And I'm going to talk about the one that bothers me soon, I promise. But it's the reason we love them despite all of the other shows out there is because we took the time, despite all of the other content that's out there, and invested in this show. And we were like, you know what? I love it. I love the casting. I love the production. I love the story. There's something about it that resonates with us. And we're like, this is what I was looking for. This is what I wanted. Now that becomes quite unfortunate when there's so much competing content out there that they can't keep up with everyone's personal tastes and everyone's demands. So they have to go with the majority, what strikes the most people. And unfortunately, a lot of the shows get caught up in getting canceled because of the wrong timing of when people find them. I think Firefly is our perfect example. People find the show too late, and at that point, it's already gone despite being such a brilliant show. And this goes for a lot of the ones that get canceled. They're so brilliant, and someone greenlit it and said it was great, but then somebody decided, no, there's not enough viewers now.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, is a lot of networks see shows, for the most part, as numbers. Like, are you bringing in enough big numbers? We like to see numbers go big. We need all the big numbers. If your number isn't big enough, then you don't get any more show. Sorry.
That's Are you just talking to Netflix right now?
No, actually, in my mind, I always think about Fox. Because again, Firefly was on Fox. Fox was the biggest and worst culprit of just canning shows right out the get. Like, before they even have room to breathe. I'm like, no, sorry. We just need another cookie cutter copy and paste sitcom. Sorry.
Let me ask you, though, like, the people always say that, right? Fox gets a hate that's unheard of in the world over over the Firefly debacle. And I don't think that show would have been popular no matter when it aired or how it aired. I just don't think it would have caught on. It would have been on the CW or WB, huge. Fox, I just didn't see it. Don't you feel it like
should have been on
Sci-Fi? Yeah, or yeah, Sci-Fi could have been there, sure. Don't you feel like there's a portion of people that just can't accept that their favorite show got canceled because nobody watched it?
Sure.
I mean, that's totally a thing. Like I said, they expect a certain number to be hit, and if you don't hit that number, then that's it. Sorry. Like, we don't care how creative or clever it was. Apparently, it wasn't creative or clever enough.
I do think that there's an issue with it, though, because there are some shows that just need additional marketing, and they would have more success. So it's like they haven't even really...
Honest answer.
Because there's some shows that I never heard of until they get canceled, and then I have watched them, and I'm like, why did this get canceled? This was a great show. If there is a show that has so many solid working pieces to it, there's no reason why it shouldn't be successful. If it's totally solid all around and everybody who does watch it loves it.
There's literally over 500 shows every year. There's 500
TV shows. But how many of them are really good?
These days, not all 412. I mean, a lot of them are very good. A lot of them are really good. A lot of the best storytelling is happening on TV. That's what many people say. So yeah, that makes sense. I really feel like people just, I get the passion. I get they feel, you know, it's family, right? To them, it's family. They spent hours learning who these people are. They weeks, months, whatever with these people. And then bam, it's over. And there's like no announcement. There's no final reel. There's no wrap up to the story that they're invested in. There's a cliffhanger, whatever it is. So they're heartbroken and I get it. And then they get mad about it. And I'm like, but people weren't watching it. Like, trust me, if it was a huge hit, Netflix isn't canceling your show, and Netflix gets a bad rap. I'm like, Netflix is cranking these things out left and right. Don't get too attached, is what I'm telling you. That's on you at this point. It's just like, you know, watch it, enjoy it. If you like it, great. Otherwise, don't expect it to come back. They're not going to spend $200 million on a TV show, and it's getting a second season. I just have a hard time seeing that, because that's too much money for that show. They thought it was going to be as huge as The Boys, but with their binge model, it's very hard for that to happen.
I wish they would take the opportunity to like do a one episode wrap up or a 2 hour wrap up for some of the shows that just barely missed the mark, or they have so many people, like it was such a sudden cancellation that nobody was prepared for it. Some cancellations, especially, I think, more on networks, they usually get a little bit more time to, like, prepare versus streaming services. Yeah, I feel like
they're
less inclined to be like, you're probably not going to get another season. Networks are like, this is your last one, buddy. You better make it good. And so in those cases, you often get a little bit better of a wrap-up versus, you know, places like Netflix, it's like they just throw it out and it's like, well, we'll give them a good enough story that'll make them want to come back for a second season, but we don't know that we're going to give it to them. And I don't know, I just feel like they would have more success, they'd have better reputation if they provided some sort of like a closing thing, or they just create a model where if they can't guarantee profitability on your show, then your show must not end with a cliffhanger.
You got to realize that that's not feasible in business. I mean, people just need to accept every show does not get a wrap up. Does it suck? Sure. But they're not going to drop more money into something that already wasn't making. They've already lost money on that at that point. They're not going to make their money back. And why invest in more of it? Now, a few of them have done it. Sense8, they did that for that. And there's been shows that have gotten that. And Netflix always gets a bad rap about that for canceling. And I just want to go on the record. They saved like two shows that I know people loved, Longmire and Lucifer. Brought them back. Yep. They had like three more seasons each. Lucifer's still like one of their most highest rated shows. Fox couldn't make it work, so maybe that's why Vinny hates Fox. I don't know. But you know, so I mean, there's all kinds of variants to this, and I think people just need to accept with all the content that's out there, they can't keep making stuff that isn't making money. And they do have, even Netflix has a line that you have to hit for that to come back. I mean, it sucks sometimes. And Vinny, I was just giving you, like, I get Fox does have, they had like a bunch of sci-fi shows, and they should just never make sci-fi shows on networks ever again. They really shouldn't.
because they can't make it work. But overall, I mean, you know, it's all about the money. Get your friends to watch it if you really want it to last.
Create a model where you don't have crazy cliffhangers then. That's my pet peeve. Like, if
what's
you
a double-edged sword, though? Because if they want you to come back, and it's hard to bring people back if it ends if it's a complete story.
It doesn't need to be a complete story, but I don't need... You can create... A talented team of writers can create a good enough conclusion that you feel like, okay, this part of the story is completed, but there's something more that we could continue here if we get more.
Are you thinking of a show that begins with a P?
The Prodigal Son?
Oh, I've been thinking about Prodigal Son this whole time. Do not take my moment from me, because going to be talking about Prodigal Son.
You sound really fired up, so maybe...
I am. This is a recent topic that has burned and scorched my soul.
Yeah. I get it. Your soul will be fine. But you're talking over 500 scripted TV shows every year. How many really super talented writers that could do those complete endings every year are part of 500 scripted shows that typically have at least 6 to 7 writers on their staff? I mean, just think about that. There's only a few shows that could pull it off well. So I mean, would you rather have a cliffhanger because the show didn't get renewed, or would you rather have a bad ending to something that you enjoyed to that point, and you can make up the ending on your own, in your mind?
I would say, to pose an alternative, which is what I had said earlier, if a show had just barely missed the mark, like if there was like a short margin where they're like, they could create a margin where you didn't hit this profitability number, but you still hit this number, so we'll give you one more episode, or we'll give you one more, you know, 2-hour thing to wrap up your story, because we want to show our consumers that we're invested in their content viewing, because the challenge that Netflix and other streaming services and network providers are going to see if they continue to have a rap for canceling shows, people are getting to the point where they don't want to start new shows because they're scared it's going to get canceled.
Not true. I know people say that all the time, and I know you believe that. Not true, because they never stop starting new shows. I don't know anyone that doesn't watch a new show every couple weeks, like these days.
I know plenty of people who don't take a chance on it until they get the second season completed. But then you're losing people in those first seasons.
I think that's a leap. I just think people say a lot of things that they don't actually follow up on. Like people are going to watch what they want to watch. They're going to take a chance. Like, sure, there's some, you know, I'll wait and see. Like, there are definitely, like, sci-fi shows, unless you get a second season, I probably won't watch you right off the gate. It's just not...
Burned you.
Because those shows are harder to find an audience. And like Debris, people were talking about Debris. I'm like, it's a network show. It's sci-fi. It's never going to make it. My gut said it's never going to make it, and it didn't make it. Manifest is still on NBC. I don't know how that's made it.
I don't know how.
No, because it's not even good. It's not even good. That one is still on, but that's sci-fi, and somehow that's finding a way. I don't know how that happened, but. Good. I hope you guys enjoy when it doesn't give you a good complete ending.
I know.
They're just very hard shows to bank on being there for very long.
I also don't like when shows end early. Sorry, after a long tirade, like what do you add? But yeah, I think the cliffhanger ending does have that. They do that for a reason. They do that to basically taunt the network, like, we have to come back. We have to finish your story, right? Right? And then they're like, nope. Sorry. Not going to happen. Guess you pissed off all your fans for nothing. But I think
it does bring people back sometimes.
Yeah, it does. But like you said, it's a double-edged sword. It could backfire or it could help. So I think people they get passionate about things. So when you have something that's yours, like, this is my thing. And you think, well, if it's my thing, it must be really good. So everyone else must also like this thing.
Yep.
Which is not always true. I think there's that bit of disconnect there where people think, like, how could this have possibly happened to my thing?
Doing a TV podcast like I've done for many, many years for The Blacklist and Westworld and, you know, doing those and feeling how passionate, and I'm using that word nicely, people can be. About their favorite show, about their favorite theories, about the things they love. And in many
passionate fans' minds, nothing exists outside of their love for that show. And for many people, they get, you know, I don't know, maybe it's a factor of, you know, I don't have much of a social life, or I'm kind of an introvert, or, you know, I just prefer to stay home. So I don't go out, hang out with a lot of friends all the time, you know? So these become their friends, those characters, that world become something they get immersed in, and they start to really, really feel close to and feel. And so it's just a very passionate fan base. It's a very deep emotional feeling. It's right to their core that they believe all this and that they wholeheartedly need this thing to continue. I mean, so that's why so many people get crushed. I think they just really become almost too immersed in the things that they love.
Mm. Again, I'm feeling personally attacked, but what I would add is that I actually do feel bad for these providers and these writers and basically all of the teams that put out TV shows, because they're the ones who get slammed when something doesn't make it. And people are very passionate. And another word for this, in this case, when we're talking about TV show fan bases, is they get crazy. They get obsessed and they can be vicious. Like, there are networks and writers who have received death threats because a show was canceled or it didn't end the way they wanted it to, or something happened in a different way than what they imagined would happen. And I do have a level of empathy or sympathy for these content creators and distributors who are just like, man, we're just trying to make you happy.
Yeah, how'd that, like, Veronica Mars ending go?
Please do not bring that up. That is a very sore subject. They went crazy. They literally wanted Rob Thomas to die. I mean, lose everything, his career and everything. But it does make you feel bad for them, because they're just trying to give you what you wanted. As a consumer, you're like, I wanted this. And then you're like, okay, here you go. And then they're like, well, not enough people wanted it. And you're like, but this was mine and you gave it to me.
And that's keep making enough. It.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you're not even paying
or
for it.
Or you shall die the way Ned Stark died.
So. 6 seasons in a movie.
It's, was that Community, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
6 seasons in a movie.
People just want what they want. I mean, there's shows where they'll be on for, I remember Hawaii Five-0 got canceled. Don't get me wrong. I like Hawaii Five-0. I was a big fan. It was like the 10th year and people still were outraged about it. I'm like, how could you? How could you? And I would see that on Twitter and I'm like, well, how could they what? Like, it's been 10 years. Elle Goloflin is tired, man. That's all it is.
Wait till Grey's Anatomy finally cancels the series people will lose their minds. I thought that people like me had finally started to be like, this is getting ridiculous. I can't. It hurts to watch this. No, people I know and see on Facebook and Twitter and all that are still as obsessed with it as if they just started the first season a year ago. So when that show finally ends, like, those writers and creators and ABC, they all better go on vacation somewhere that nobody can find them.
I'm sure they'll be fine. So what's the hardest a TV cancellation has hit you?
I don't know that I can narrow it down to just one, but... And I guess I've had the fortune of not watching a lot of shows that just ended abruptly, like... Most of the shows I really, really enjoy, they get quote-unquote canceled. Like, the network comes down and says, hey, this is probably going to be your last season. So at least they get a send-off.
Mm.
But still, like, that feeling of like, oh, man, again, this is my thing. I don't want it to be over. I think the number one for me would have to be Adventure Time, as surprising as it might be to some people. I just really enjoyed the show. Like, it looks super simplistic and cartoony and, like, surface value, like, oh, this is a kid's cartoon. Like, why are you watching this? But actually, it's got a lot of really deep messages in the stories. And I don't know, it just really resonated with me. Pendleton Ward, who created the show and wrote for most of it, just such a creative guy. He's so weird. But he's just so creative. And I think that's the number one thing for me, that when a show gets canceled, it's like, well, I don't get to see this person's creation anymore. I don't get that entertainment from them. I don't get to that little peek into their mind anymore. So I think that's probably the part for me that sucks the most about when shows get canceled. So for me, it'd be Adventure Time. But close second is Night and Day. Number one, Adventure Time. Number two, The Punisher.
Oh, that was harsh. That, I mean, it's recent, so it's recent pain, so I don't know how.
Yeah, and obviously it had to happen because, you know, corporations, but man, I wanted more.
And you just know Disney would never do that.
No, never. Like even putting it on Hulu might be a little, they might tone it down too much to be worth it.
I don't know. They did put out The Handmaid's Tale. That's pretty dark and crazy stuff.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of dark, though.
There's still blood in both shows.
I don't know. I stopped watching once I realized I just didn't care anymore. It was just too negative. I'm like, I can't watch hate, misery, misery, hate, like that. Hate the show. They should really just
it's brightened up a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it's a delight. I'm sure, you know, it's absolutely, it's a feminist movement at this point. It's a delightful little upbeat.
Lots of flower picking and drum circles.
Amanda, which one hit you the hardest?
Well, like Vinny, I can't say that I have as many experiences with shows being actively canceled that I'm currently watching. Some of them I've gotten through and then I'm catching up to it and then I find out it's canceled like while I'm watching it. But the one that I would say is probably the deepest is Veronica Mars. I mean, the third season in general was a little iffy, and then you get a movie because a bunch of people put money into it and you're like, oh, that's cool. And then you get heartbreak again when they put out the fourth season. And because people are so mad and sending death threats, it's essentially canceled again without them saying it. But it pretty much is. So it's like you get two heartbreaks all in one TV series. And that just doesn't feel good. It doesn't settle well in the soul.
Hmm.
I gotta love rabid fans.
Yeah, I feel you, because Firefly had a similar experience. You know, that was... I'll tell you two things. I'll tell you one that hit me the hardest, and I'll tell you the one that hit me even harder than that, but it didn't happen at the time.
That was an honorable mention.
Well, no, because it's Firefly's Firefly is going to get discussed. Because
It's on everybody's list.
Literally, it's the most talked about one. We did a poll, and like by a couple, I don't know, thousands. I don't know what it was, but whatever the number is. But Vengeance Unlimited, I've talked about that show before. Listener, the last time I talked about it, lovingly pointed out that it's on YouTube. You can watch the whole episode. It's not great quality, but you can watch the show, Michael Madsen, where he's basically a rich guy out making people that got away with crimes pay for their crimes. He's not above framing them. He's not above making sure that they suffer. But he also kind of does it legally. It's a real tricky dichotomy. It's a show that's way ahead of its time. It was a complete anti... Oh, man, it was so good. It's a complete anti-hero show where the lead hero is kind of the worst guy on the show, but also the best guy on the show. It's such a weird dichotomy. And we never got the answer to what happened to his family that made him this way. You know, what led to this? And that was, I think it was like 16 episodes or 17 episodes, and then the show was canceled. That was crushed, and just emotionally crushed. I still can't get a good even DVD copy of it, which breaks my heart. But my brother got me a pretty good copy, so I'll count that. But the show that everybody talks about is Firefly. And when I say, you know, hit me the hardest, it didn't hit me when it was canceled because I wasn't an avid watcher. I don't know about you guys, but I didn't really watch it when it was on TV. So everybody's like bitching about Fox, and I'm like, yeah, I get it. They aired the first episode out of order. Yada, yada, yada. Most of those episodes you could watch on their own anyway, so I don't think that's fair to blame that, even though I get it. I get the argument. I just feel like it's not a network TV show. It was too quirky. It was a space Western. It was just a hard sell all the way across the board.
Which is super popular now.
Yeah, right. The Mandalorian. Yeah.
It took a while. It took a while to find its footing, you know? Just like Vengeance Unlimited. If they just would have made a movie, maybe it would have done well. I don't know. But The thing that I noticed about Firefly is most people that I've talked to, and I ask this whenever I talk to people that tell me they love Firefly, most people I know found it on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
They did not watch it when it aired. Now, you can blame Fox, whatever you want to do. I'm just saying, people that still get mad about that cancellation, most of the time of people, I'm just my skewed sample. Most of those people did not watch it when it aired. They watched it on DVD, and myself included. Still crushed us because you never get more. You only got the 14 episodes. That kind of sucked. But I want to ask you two, you both like Firefly? Yes? No?
Yes, sir.
Did you watch it on TV?
Well, I would have been 10 at the time.
But did you watch so, it on TV?
You could have.
I could have, but being a 10-year-old, I know Cartoon Network, Nickelodeon, Disney Channel, and History Channel. So nowhere.
You watched History Channel as a 10-year-old?
Yes. Have you met me?
So weird.
I'm a big ol' nerd.
I know, but it's weird. Does that.
Well, that's why when he watches Hamilton, it's just music to him. It's not a history
lesson.
I know,
right? I know.
I'm like, hey, I know what's going to happen, but this is fun.
And I'm like, what? This is real? This happened?
And he's like, watch out for Aaron Burr, sir.
He's a bad egg.
No, but that's where most people found it. So it was heartbreaking in the fact that once you find it and you realize, wow, this is great. Like, these characters are fantastic. Yeah. The actors are great. The scripts are great. He Who Shall Remain Nameless was great working on that show. And you find it, and then it built this momentum that I don't think ever would have happened had it not been canceled. Had it not found another life on DVD, I don't think the movie would have happened, Serenity, which ended up being a great movie. I also think they screwed the movie release up. They dumped it in the middle of September when nobody cares about a space western. Like, they're just done with summer. It should have been a summer movie all the way, 100%. So, I mean, like, I feel like Firefly has lived the curse of obscurity, but also that randomness has become its best friend. Like, that's how people find it, because it's so weird. It's such an obscure scenario and story, and has its own world, that it's a hard sell for studios, but fans have done a wonderful job of selling it to each other. And that's why that's connected. I don't think it ever would have worked on TV. Maybe now, because it's a different world now. But when it aired, I don't think it had a chance.
Well, now it would have been on a streaming service, and I think it would have done super well.
Sure. Resurrected on Disney. Fox is owned by Disney now. I mean, they want to make money.
Oh, yeah.
Reunite the cast. Can't bring the creator back, though.
Yeah, I feel like it's been so far removed, though. I don't know if they'd ever do that.
I think they would. I just don't know how good it would be.
I don't think they would, because Whedon's cursed right now. Well,
and especially since, I mean, they kind of gave you, like Aaron said, the wrap up with Serenity. They're like, you know what? That's good enough. That's all you get.
But no, we want more.
Especially if we can rewrite the part in Serenity where Wash dies, which is garbage, if you ask me. And it made me outraged.
Spoilers.
It's a leaf in the wind, you know.
God.
I actually like that. That was a nice surprise. That was like, oh, wow. Because the best part about that movie was it felt like a real fan experience. Mm-hmm. Like, fans, our mouths, our momentum made that movie happen. The movie only happens because fans would not shut up about Firefly. And then he had the nerve to kill off probably one of our favorite characters on the show.
The most likable character.
Definitely the most likable. And in a very hero moment, in a way. And I thought that was great.
I didn't hate it. I mean, I get why it happened, and it was impactful in the way that it was supposed to be impactful. And my heart was a little bit torn and frayed, and
it gave you stakes. It built stakes.
It did, and it showed that they were willing to do that. This was not a movie that was just going to be there to give you a fan experience. It was like, if we're going to do this, we're really going to do this. So are you willing to, are you prepared for what we're going to give you? And I'm okay with that. It's sad, but I'm okay with it.
Look, I get it, and it was a great, impactful moment, but I'm not okay with that. All these years later, I'm still not okay. It's in my notes for therapy sessions.
have any others really impacted you for various reasons? Manda, why don't you talk about Prodigal Son?
Yeah, please let me get this off my chest. Okay, so I'm just going to name off three. Ghost Whisperer, loved that show, thought it was great. I get it probably didn't have that many watchers, viewers, but whatever. I enjoyed it, and it made me sad that it was gone. The Punisher, I did not expect to love that show the way that I came to love it, and I'm still sad that there is no more Punisher. And Brooklyn Nine-Nine, although we got it to come back for a little bit longer, it did get a cancellation. And
oh my God, stop it. Stop it. You got like, what, 9 years of that damn thing? That's not a...
Only because of a renewal. It was on like year 5 or 6, and then they were just like, canceled.
That's not the only TV show currently on, I don't think.
No, but it's still one that impacted me, man. Let me have it.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Now, let me tell you about the one that is... I didn't want to use as the most, in like, the hardest hit for me, but... It's nearing Veronica Mars, and that's Prodigal Son. I love this show. I love this show. I love it so much. I think there is so much uniqueness to it. I love the cast. And when we watched an episode collectively, the world watched what happened to be the last episode and only found out that it was the last episode a week before, and even the cast had no idea it was being canceled until a week before their apparently last episode was to be aired. That was crushing. I will not forgive them. I will not. Again, thank you, Fox. I think it's Fox. And I don't know. I really don't appreciate when things like this happen. When you don't even tell the cast and the crew the show is not being renewed, it's flat out just being canceled. What you've developed is the end of it. And we're not even going to tell you. We're just going to tell the world. And you can find out with everybody else. To me, that pisses me off a little bit. Because not only did you disrespect your fans, but you disrespected LDP. And how dare you? How dare you?
Lou Diamond Phillips?
Yes.
I didn't know we referred to him as LDP now, but all right.
We do on the Smirk podcast, Aaron. Have you forgotten? But yeah, that was, I mean, the moment I saw him tweeting and he's like, oh, well, I guess the show's canceled, basically. I'm like, oh man, how did I find out before you? That's just so sad. And the way that this last season ended.
I need more. Is there a cliffhanger? I haven't, don't tell me what happens. Just yes or no. I mean, I don't need
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Pretty significant one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's
because
sucks.
Again, nobody knew this was going to happen.
All right. Well, I will throw in Briscoe County Jr. I really love that show. Bruce Campbell is a cowboy, and there's like science fiction involved. And yes, Fox show. So I guess this is leading. I guess I'm kind of building the case for Vinny against Fox, even though I'm trying to go against
him. I'm telling you, Fox is run by the devil,
Satan incarnate.
There was a show called The Highwayman. Back in late 80s, I think, early 90s, whatever it was. And it was Sam Jones, you know, Flash Gordon and Jacko were like U.S. Marshals. And they were driving trucks and they were trying to thwart crime. And they had a helicopter in the back in the trailer. And it was kind of like this cool, ridiculous concept that just worked for me. And nobody watched it but me.
Is that what they – didn't they make a movie with a similar title on Netflix just a couple of years ago?
No, that was a Kevin Costner movie, and that was nothing like this. This was ridiculously ridiculous. I can't describe it any other way. It was like completely absurd, but fun. Just fun. And then there's a show called Midnight Caller, which I loved. It was on for a couple of years before it finally got canceled. I mean, it was kind of like every year you didn't know if it was going to come back, and then they finally canceled it. It was just, I loved the show. It was Gary Cole was a midnight call radio host, and he would just get weird calls from people and get involved in their lives. And it could be mysteries, it could be murder, it could be just drama. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happened. So it was a very interesting, unique kind of show. And Gary Cole was great in it. I mean, everybody knows Gary Cole now. He's very funny, does a lot of supporting roles, but he was the guy and he was great in it.
How long did that show last?
2 years, 3 years, maybe. Oh,
okay.
You know, it didn't last long, but when it was canceled, it's like, oh man, I like, it was like, I like that show. Well, there's another, Sonny Spoon. I love Sonny Spoon.
Nobody knows that show.
Not anybody here.
No.
Mario Van Peebles was like a private eye, and he was just, he was very cool, man. And I just love that show. I don't know why I loved it, but I did. And they canceled it. But that's it. You ready to hear what listeners picked as their top 10 harshest, most unexpected TV cancellations?
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to throw out a couple, but okay.
Oh, yeah. I guess you get to talk too, Vinny. Vinny, what about you?
I know I got dredged up for this, but like, I guess if you don't mind, sir.
Yeah, go ahead.
If I could say a few things. I didn't have that many picks anyways. Two of them are actually, I understand why they were canceled, very niche crowd. One of them being Blue Mountain State. It's a show about college football team that I believe was on Spike on TV. Very, yeah, like I said, very niche crowd for that one. Especially now, that show would not last on the air. That would be canceled so fast.
Really?
Yeah. Another one being Ash vs. Evil Dead. I feel like a little less niche, but still it's got that campiness from the movies. And I feel like that doesn't appeal to wide audiences, but apparently enough to get a fair amount of seasons.
Yeah, you got three.
So I think, yeah, another show that got a decent enough send off. So I can't hate that too much, but I wouldn't have minded a few more. And then finally, as I said before, just most of the Marvel shows. Daredevil got a decent enough send-off. I wouldn't mind it a little bit more. Luke Cage was going to some really interesting territory. Spoilers when he decides to kind of decide he's going to strong-arm protect Harlem. Like, takes out the upper management, as it were, of the crime and decides,
yeah.
You know what?
Yeah.
I'm going to fill that role. I'm going to protect Harlem my way. And then it's just like, ooh, buddy, what are you doing? And then, of course, the Punisher. Like, being such a big fan and seeing how well they did, how well John Bernthal acted the role, how they really developed the character, and especially that very last scene where it's just like you get chills. It's like, ooh, let's see what kind of carnage is just going to be rolling through next season. Oh, no. Okay. Disney's taking their toys back.
Yeah,
that's unfortunate.
We spent a lot of money. That's ours now. It sucked. And yeah, actually, Iron Fist, their final episode was going to some cool places too. Like I was finally on board with Iron Fist.
Yeah, I can't remember the character's name because overall the show was all right. But yeah, it was going interesting. I just wasn't super interested in that certain show.
Mostly but because of him.
Yeah. He wasn't the best.
I'm Iron Fist. How do we know? Because you keep telling us. All right. Now, listener top 10. So this is the 10 TV cancellations that impacted listeners the most. Futurama, which did come back, I think. So you got more seasons for that one, right?
Yeah. But again, Fox.
Yeah, there you go. Well, a couple of these are... Okay, you know what? I get it.
I'm just saying.
I get it.
They're the culprits behind most of the world's tragedies. I'm just going to put that out there.
Flash forward. I think I watched the first couple episodes, but I never really got into it. Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles. I've heard a lot about that.
Oh, I haven't.
Well, yeah, you're the problem.
Yeah, you're part of the problem. Pushing Daisies.
Oh, yeah.
Glow. Yeah,
I do remember people being very upset about that, like just a couple years ago.
They just like last year, I think it was. They just wanted the ending. That's all they wanted. And I think that one got a new season approved, and then they canceled it.
Mm. Well, that's rude. Yeah. That's just plain mean.
That's in your best Full House. That's rude. Jericho. Everybody knows the story of Jericho, where they bombarded the studio by sending them nuts. And that's how they got 6 more episodes to finish the story for season 2. But yeah, I agree. Jericho, I loved Jericho. And that crushed me when they canceled that show. You guys don't know that story, do you?
No, actually. sounds interesting.
Nuts was like a thing on the show. And so they bombarded the studio with nuts, like just tons of nuts to remind them that Jericho deserve to get their story finished out.
Well, see, now that's just clever.
That is clever.
Good job on those fans.
It worked. They got 6 episodes. That's all they got, which kind of sucked, but
probably worked because some studio exec had a peanut allergy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's just hiding inside. Make them stop. Make them stop.
We'll do 6 episodes. That's all we're going to do. Get Skeet Ulrich back here. Come on.
Freaks and Geeks.
Wait, he was in that?
Yeah, he was the star of it.
Oh, I love him. I didn't know that. I never watched Jericho.
Go watch it. There's a total of 29 episodes. The story is finished. I love that show.
Oh, well, that's encouraging.
Yep. Yeah, Freaks and Geeks. A lot of people love that one. That was kind of harsh. A lot of famous people spawned from that. So it's probably a good thing it got canceled.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Santa Clarita Diet.
Towards the top of the list?
Yeah. People apparently.
Wow. Yeah.
Timothy Olyphant and Drew Barrymore.
I mean, I knew it was popular. I just didn't realize it was that popular.
It wasn't that popular. That's why it got canceled.
It's just popular in our group.
Yeah. Well, yeah, probably. And number 2, which really no surprise because people still talk about this one, Hannibal. People want to bring Hannibal back.
Did that one get an improper ending?
Kind of. But I got to be honest. The 3rd season was getting just annoying. I couldn't even finish the 3rd season. So I don't know why you need a 4th.
Hmm.
Yep. And what's really funny is if you read the books or you know Hannibal Lecter, if you watch the first 2 seasons, the 2nd season has a magnificent finale. It's really, it really captures Hannibal Lecter. It really captures how dark he is, how maniacal he can be, how sadistic he can be, and how charming he can be. You know, it captured all of that in that finale. And then the 3 comes back and retcons almost everything.
Hmm.
What?
Yeah, I hated it. Absolutely hated the 3rd season.
Weird.
Mm-hmm. And then 1 is, take a guess.
Border Town.
Yes. Yep. You got it. Nosferatu. Let's mention all the crappy shows that have been out there. They only got 1 season. No, Firefly. Firefly wins.
Of course.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when you think about TV cancellations, that is the 1 on everyone's list.
It is.
But to Aaron's point, I also don't know anybody who watched it while it was on TV actively.
Yeah.
So.
Just saying. I just feel like it's better. Like streaming, I think it would have been a huge hit. It just... too early, too ahead of its time. And you'll never come back because you really need the showrunner for that one. And we can't say his name anymore for the time being anyway. All right.
So sad.
Firefly brought to you by Taika Waititi.
Oh,
okay.
I'm on board.
Right.
Let's do it. All right. What are the upcoming releases that are coming out?
On June 11th, coming to VOD, we have Holler. Hoping to pay for college, a determined young woman lands a dangerous job working in a scrap metal yard during a brutal winter. With her goal in sight, she soon finds herself torn between a promising future and the family she would leave behind. And then also on June 11th, we have coming to Netflix, Wish Dragon. Determined teen Din is longing to reconnect with his childhood best friend when he meets a wish-granting dragon that shows him the magic of possibilities. Hopefully it's not a creepy dragon like in Neverending Story.
Hey.
Hey.
Don't you hate on Falcor.
Creepy-ass dragon.
I'm just saying there's some creepiness.
I'm just saying it wasn't a luck dragon. It was close, though.
And then June 16th, we get the Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard. The world's most lethal odd couple, bodyguard Michael Bryce and hitman Darius Kincaid, are back on another life-threatening mission. Still unlicensed and under scrutiny, Bryce is forced into action by Darius's even more volatile wife, the infamous international con artist Sonia Kincaid. As Bryce is driven over the edge by his 2 most dangerous protectees, the trio get in over their heads in a global plot and soon find that they are all at that stand between Europe and a vengeful and powerful madman.
Okay.
Sold me when I watched the trailer. I mean, you put Salma Hayek in it, I'm probably going to show up, but then you get Ryan Reynolds and Samuel L. Jackson, I'm definitely going to be there.
Yeah, it looks like a good time.
Yeah, it looks like a rare sequel that might be better than the original, too. All right, any recent film or TV recommendations we haven't already talked about, Amanda?
Well, Sweet Tooth is only a couple episodes into that, but that has been good. I also would like to mention Lucifer has its second part of the fifth season out. My review is also on the Hollywood Outsiders website if you'd like to check it out. But it is worth it, and it is getting more episodes in a sixth season, which is encouraging.
Yeah, but Sweet Tooth, what is that? That's about the kid that's a deer, right? Or something?
Yes, essentially. Basically, there's a change in births where all of the children, all of the babies born go from being regular human babies to being like animal, part animal babies. And what? Yeah, so they're not all deer children. There's like different animals. So it's kind of about this specific kid who has been sheltered from the rest of the world, who has tried to, they're essentially trying to eradicate these. And there's a sickness that's going around. And this kid wants to, after something happens, he's trying to find his way navigating through the world, which he's never experienced before. So there's kind of like a little bit of a magical element to it in terms of like seeing it through a child's eye, if you will. But there's also some quirky darkness because people want to kill kids.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, have you met kids?
All right.
That's a joke.
Anything from you?
Really, only one new piece of media that I recommend. I don't know if you've talked about it yet, but Bo Burnham's special Inside. Basically, if you want to feel better and then worse almost at the same time, go watch Bo Burnham's Inside, as he has an introspective lens pointed at himself and the human race as a whole as you navigate your way through his life in quarantine and being an internet personality.
It's really creative, I will add.
It's creative and dark and will make you want to lie down and think about your small, fragile existence.
It's kind of like having an existential crisis, but laughing about it.
Hmm.
It's kind of wonderful, but it's really funny. It's really, really, really funny. And if you're not familiar with Bo Burnham, he like sings his comedy. And so they're actually kind of catchy songs, like I will have them in my head, or I will, you know, like after I had seen the special, I went to Spotify to see if I could find the songs, and they are not there yet.
No, there is one on YouTube, though, about the internet. And the best way to describe it is it's like if the internet was a person who was the antagonist of the world, but he won, and he is singing his theme song about how he won.
I will recommend on video on demand The Killing of Two Lovers, which is Clayne Crawford as a man who finds out his estranged wife is sleeping with someone else, and he's starting to slowly lose his mind as he worries about losing his family, and how far will he go to protect them, / save them, / get them back, / is there really anything to save them from? Like, it's a whole abstract kind of film. It's a very methodically paced, it's a very slow burn, but it's carried by actors. And Clayne Crawford is the actor that carries the movie, and he is great in the role. I mean, I definitely recommend The Killing of Two Lovers, but I will also add, if you don't like slow moving films that take a long time with a scene, that let a scene play out, that let a character layer their performances with an actual performance as opposed to what's on the page, you probably won't like it. But if you love character dramas, if you love those kinds of films that really get into the mind and hearts of characters, you will really enjoy it, I think. And our weekly streaming recommendation is my turn. It's The Clove Hitch Killer is what I'm going to recommend. Also on Netflix. A bunch of this stuff's on Netflix. Charlie Plummer is a young man who comes to believe that his dad, who was Dylan McDermott, is a long-thought-dead serial killer. I just stumbled upon this while I was looking for something to watch one night, and I was sick of new stuff. It's a movie that I just didn't think would be very good, but it was really captivating. Like, I was really interested and intrigued in seeing how this kid is going to handle finding out if his dad is a serial killer, and does he believe him, and what does he do if he does believe him? Like, do you turn him in? Do you Do you address it directly with Dad? Like, what do you do? And it's very interesting. Like, some of the twists and turns that the story takes. And there is one genuine, oh, shit, moment that happens about two-thirds of the way in where I did not see it coming. I've seen a bazillion movies. I did not see it coming. And I really like how they played with us a little bit. So, The Clove Hitch Killer. It's on Netflix.
I mean, that does sound like an interesting premise.
Definitely. You know what? That's going to do it for this episode. So thank you guys for being here. Share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group or on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. Our website is thehollywoodoutsider.com. Don't forget Indiana Jones. Don't forget Indiana Jones is now available on 4K in those combo packs. You can rate and subscribe us on your preferred podcast app. Vinny, thank you so much for filling in. Where can people find you?
I'm most active on Twitter at Black Label Art, capital B, L, and A. That's at Black Label Art. Sometimes I do actually make art, sometimes, but it's mostly retweets of better art, memes, and just generic thoughts. So, you know, if you like that kind of thing.
If you like that kind of thing. And you can find Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk and at Sync Into This on Twitter, and me at The Blacklist Exposed and Presenting Hitchcock and at Aaron Smirks. And The Blacklist is coming to a crazy end where apparently the answers we've always wanted are finally coming out. So thank God. All right. And in closing, we're going to do a little something different. You know, usually at the very end of the show, we have a game or we have something a little different. Well, I'm going to do that. And it's called Movie Manners. And what that means is I'm going to talk directly to you guys listening about movie manners. Basically, whenever I do this, it's going to be like some random thing that happens when you're in a movie theater or something along those lines that I think probably needs to be readdressed. And it's going to be phones in movie theaters. And we've all been there, right? The lights go down, the movie's rolling, you're having a wonderful time, and then somewhere in the darkness, a light pops on. You see texting. You see internet surfing. You see someone actively working to ruin the experience of every single person in the theater. Who do you think you are, glowy stranger? Are you in charge of the nuclear program and you have to stay on high alert in case you have to push the button? Is your child on life support and you're waiting to hear if you have to unplug them? If so, why are you in a movie? If not, it's time to acknowledge that your opinion of yourself is much, much higher than everyone else's opinion of you. Now, see, I know we're in a period of time where everyone's a winner. But you just aren't this important. No one's going to miss your comments, your likes, your tweets. No one's going to say, gee, what does Steve have to say about this breaking Marvel news? Nobody's staring at their phone waiting for Steve to say his popcorn was overpriced. Nobody cares, Steve. Nobody. Oh, and that light that you think is dim, it's not dim enough. We all see it. It looks like Batman is being summoned from your chair. And we are all wondering if it's legal to throw popcorn all over you. Maybe a soda. Maybe just dump you in the trash bin on the way out. Now, I know many people haven't been in theaters for a while and have spent over a year watching movies with their phone open, completely ignoring your family and friends to constantly update the internet on your every move. Thank God we were all so worried about everything you were doing during COVID. But those dark days are finally over. It's time to stop being a savage and be civilized again. Put your phone away, Steve. Stop being an asshole. And remember, the next time you head to a theater, if you see a Steve flashing his light everywhere, I highly recommend you take out your phone. Collectively as a group, gather around Steve, turn on the flashlight, and shine it directly in his selfish, self-obsessed eye. Politely. And don't forget to buy popcorn.